beautiful downtown Milheim, in the smack dab center of the Keystone State. This is Lou Bryson with Seen Through a Glass, the podcast that's mostly about food and drink in central Pennsylvania. Welcome to episode 34, Mansfield, a stop worth making. Mansfield, a stop worth making. Why do I introduce this town that way? Well, it's because Mansfield sits at the intersection of two of Pennsylvania's better-known state highways, both of them favorite drives of my family for as far back as I can remember. Route 15 runs north from the Maryland border to Gettysburg, then over to Harrisburg and up the Susquehanna River. If you suffer through the torturous stretch of plazas and big-box stores between Sealands Grove and Shamokin Dam, with maybe a quick stop for some Skeeter's Pit barbecue, then it's over the hills to the Bucknell University campus in downtown Lewisburg. From there, you'll drive upriver past the iconic Clyde Peeling's Reptile Land, and you can stop and see the snakes and Komodo dragons, and then sail over the ridge into Williamsport. From there, 15 becomes full-on four-lane through the woods and ridges to Mansfield, and then continues up along the Tioga River to the New York border. Crosswise, the beloved and famously scenic Route 6 winds east from Edinburgh, south of Erie, across the wild northern tier of the state through towns like Kane, Cowdersport, Galton, and Wellsboro to Mansfield. It then rolls on through the endless mountains to Scranton, finally landing at Milford in the beautiful Delaware Water Gap National Recreation Area. And there's Mansfield, right in the middle of it. It is, as York Hollow Brewing founder Jared York will tell you in our interview, the gateway to the Pennsylvania wilds, with state parks, forests, and game lands all around it. It's also the home of Mansfield University of Pennsylvania, the Mounties. But if you're not going to the university, why would you stop in Mansfield while you're passing through on Routes 15 or 6? Well, glad you asked. There are some very good reasons. York Hollow Brewing Company and Eatery is the usual one for me, and Conspiracy Coffee is now another. There's a butcher, a baker, and yes, Chasing Fireflies is a candle maker. There's a tight little main street downtown and some steady food trucks that offer a nice variety of eats. There are a few stops nearby within a mile or two that are pretty good too, and one striking, well, semi-natural feature just up the road that I wanted to tell you about. We're going to get to all of that, but first, here's what I'm drinking today. It seemed appropriate to have something from York Hollow, and happily, Jared provided me with a 22-ounce bottle sample of his usually draft-only Rauch beer. A Rauch beer is a smoked beer, and I've made no secret that I'm a fan of them, and Jared had had seen that on my Facebook postings and had a bottle set aside for me. Rauch beer is literally German for smoke beer. Rauch is smoke. You get it by smoking the malt. It's the same way you get the peat flavor in scotch. You smoke the malt over a peat fire. In this case, it's a low smoldering wood fire. The purpose of this, I mean, this is how malt always used to be dried over a wood fire. So the early beers back in the, certainly in the medieval period, would all have had a kind of smoky flavor to them. They also probably would have been sour, so we try to avoid that, you know, unless it's intentional. Jared was not going for that here, and he hits it, because this is it's a fairly clean beer. It's, wow, a dark amber in color, just a little hint of red and orange to it, and not a lot of head, but what's there is a nice little parchment color, kind of a light cream. The aroma, wow, it's almost like it is a light smoke, a wood smoke, but there's almost like a little bit of cookie or, wow, it's almost like a molasses cookie. This is intriguing. I like this. Let's take a sip. You know, I have noticed in the few times more recently that I've stopped at York Hollow is, Jared tends to understate things a bit, which I like a lot. I don't like a beer that hits me over the head, and this is doing that. The smoke is clearly present, but it doesn't grab you by the uvula and shake A lot of smoked beers are really smoky, and I love that, but I like this too. It's actually got a, this actually has a pretty nice, supple malt body. I can't tell you where to go to get this except York Hollow, and I can't tell you when he's going to have it on next. Wow. You know what? Just keep an eye out for Rauch Beer at any of your local breweries, and if you don't see one, ask about it, because we'd all be better off with more smoky beers. So thanks. Before we actually go to Mansfield, here's your smack dab in the center, sponsored by the Happy Valley Adventure Bureau. You know, I'm starting to hear birds and see buds, and that means spring is coming. And in Center County, that means the Farm Bounty is just ahead. Get a guide to some of our best agritourism spots with the new Fresh from the Field Trail mobile passport from the Happy Valley Adventure Bureau. You'll get deliveries of fresh-raised information on spots like Way Fruit Farm, the new Kinfork Amish Farm Collective Market, Gutessa Cheese, and farm-to-table restaurants like Pine Grove Hall and ReFarm Cafe. Some of the spots offer discounts to passport holders, some offer free stuff, and if you check in at each place as you visit, you can win fresh-from-the-field trail prizes. Go to the happyvalley.com page and find the trail, then click on Let's Go, and you'll be on your way to Fields of Plenty. Now, the origin story of Mansfield is about as straightforward as it gets. Asa Mann came to the area from Rhode Island around 1821, following his sister and her husband. He built a large log cabin and ran it as a hotel and general store, the first in the area. He bought 200 acres of land in 1824 on the site of what is now downtown Mansfield, and as he cleared it, it became known as Mann's Field, and the name stuck. Mann would also build and run a sawmill and a distillery. He was the town's first postmaster, a county commissioner, and a constable. He also built the area's first canal boat, starting a local industry that would grow as lumbering and shingle making did. He sold land to the Corning-Blossberg Railroad. In 1839, though, Mann upped sticks and left for Illinois, where he died 4 years later, leaving behind the town as his legacy. I got all of that from Joyce Tice's website. Tice runs her somewhat eccentric history center on Main Street, the Museum of Us. It's a collection of local photographs and genealogical records that is staggering in its depth. Here's something else of interest about Mansfield. It was a dry town from 1870 to 1981. When the state chartered the Mansfield Normal School, which would become the university, they made the campus dry along with a 2-mile radius around it. It didn't stop drinking, but it sure put a dent in the bar business. That was finally voted out in 1981, and as a freshly created drinking district, Mansfield got the state's regulated 1 liquor license per 3,000 residents. As near as I can tell, that 1 liquor license is now next door to York Hollow, the Thin Line Tavern, run by Merle Garrison, the former police chief in town. There's not a lot of boozers in town, maybe, but there's more to life than drinking. Though I was in town to interview Jared York at York Hollow Brewing. I got there a bit early that morning, so I decided to stop for a late breakfast at the Conspiracy Coffee Company and Bakery. Conspiracy is the theme, and they have fun with it. Bigfoot and UFOs are the decor, with a prominently displayed tinfoil hat. Every table has a bite-sized conspiracy theory sticker. Mine was, "The fashion industry doesn't put pockets in women's clothes. It's because they sell handbags, too." Sounds pretty reasonable to me. They do roast their own coffee, and I had a pour-over of the Honduran they had on offer that day. It was exceptional, so I bought a bag to take home. I also got a breakfast sandwich. Ham and fried eggs on sourdough toast set me up pretty well. The toast was tangy and delicious. I was just finishing my sandwich when the owner, Thad Compton, walked in the side door. The waitress pointed me out to him as a podcast guy, and we chatted. They had built their own first coffee roaster, and as things got more serious, they went ahead and bought a larger one, and, well, things just kept going, and Conspiracy is a town staple now. Also, it turned out that Thad is a fan of the live music at Elk Creek Cafe in Milheim. I hope to run into him there sometimes. I'll buy him a beer. I left, and I walked over to York Hollow Brewing. I've been to York Hollow probably 4 times over the past 10 years, last time being for the Carnival of Stouts I told you about a few episodes back. But this time, I wanted to get the full story, and I'm pretty sure I did. Give a listen. Hey, I'm here with Jared York. We're at York Hollow Brewing Company in Mansfield, Pennsylvania. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good. I love coming up here. It's just such a beautiful drive. I came up 287 through Salinasburg.
Oh, yeah, that is gorgeous.
I love that drive. And then, you know, Route 6 runs right through town.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't miss. York Hollow. The name is Y-O-R-K-H-O-L-O.
Yes.
And you explained that it's from an abbreviation on dairy farm?
My family, York family dairy farm, established 1861, is York Hollow. So it's like in the valley.
Yeah.
And when it comes to dairy farming, when you breed cattle, the name of the farm is usually in the name of the cow.
Oh.
So instead of having like two words, York Hollow, they shortened it to H-O-L-O. Connected to the York.
Okay.
So if you go to the farm, the Century Farm sign will be spelled that way.
Oh, okay. And is that's nearby?
Yes. It's about halfway between here and Troy. So it's east of here, about 8-9 miles.
Yeah. Nice.
In Bungie, Pennsylvania.
Wow. There's one you want to be careful of. That is your family and your logo. Who is that, your grandfather?
That is my grandfather.
Every time I see him, I'm like, why do they have Stephen King on the side of their building?
Yeah. I initially had a more detailed photo of him.
Oh no, this works great.
Oh, yeah, for like logo or shirt purposes, you can reprint that better.
Yeah, because it's, you know, it's like friendly and mysterious at the same time.
Yeah.
Because I got to be honest, I went down to Conspiracy Coffee before this,
yeah,
and I'm looking around there, and I'm thinking of that logo. I'm like, is there something going on in Mansfield that I don't know? So tell us how you came from a dairy farm to a brewery.
You know, I went to school for environmental biology.
Okay.
To go to school, to afford it, I had to join the National Guard.
Oh, okay.
To pay for it.
Uh-huh.
When I joined, my recruiter told me that the worst thing I'd ever have to do would be to like fill sandbags if there's ever a flood and help with like removing people from houses or something like that. This was before 9/11.
Wow.
So I joined the Guard. Eventually I get deployed. Like 2.5 years into my college career, I got deployed to Iraq for 1.5 years. And it just kind of changed my perspective on what I wanted to do.
Okay.
I realized that, you know, initially I thought with the biology degree, I'd be working in a lab, maybe with the government or something like that. And then I realized the government isn't really has my best, you know, what.
Uh-huh.
So I started.
Your paths don't necessarily converge.
Yeah. They don't really care about you. They don't care about their motivation. I started looking around and, you know, craft beer, this was what, mid-2000s? And, you know, the Bullfrog had been there for a decade. This is my mother's building. She had a salon. She owned this building.
Oh, okay.
And so, like, she loved the Bullfrog, and she had mentioned it to me a little bit. I started drinking craft beer, and I was like, you know, it's just kind of an eye-opener of, like, flavors.
Right. Yeah.
And then I started looking into it, and I was like, this is what I've been going to school for, like chemistry, biology. This totally lines up with everything I've already learned. So then that's when I started looking into brewery schools. And I think at the time there's only like 3 that I could think of, like Siebel, UC Davis, and the Vermont one, American Brewers Guild. Yeah. And that one was online. And so it fit my schedule better. So that's why I applied and decided to go with that one.
Yeah. And I, like I said, mutual friend, just a shout out to Steve.
Yeah.
I've been up there to the brewery and spent a couple of really pleasant hours just hanging out and drinking and talking. It's great.
The schooling was awesome. It was like 6 months of like online, like CDs, classwork, and then, you know, a few exams during that, and then we had to go up there for a week or two for like hands-on training. And man, that was a blast. It was at Otter Creek it was originally.
Wow. There's a name from the past.
Yeah, and They also had like a sister business that was like the only organic.
Oh, right. With Peak? Yeah. Peak Organic?
Something like that. Something it was like the that. Only organic brewery at the time.
Yeah. So this yeah. is
nearly 20 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. And they were making good beer too.
Yeah. Phenomenal beer.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'll never, before that, I never had been in a large brewery. And I'll never forget walking in and having that smell.
Oh, yeah.
Of the mash hitting me. I just fell in love instantly.
Yeah, it's a wave, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Where, I was just at a, I can't remember where I was. I was just at a brewery and they opened the door on the brew house and that.
Hits you.
Yeah, it's just rich and warm and it's really cool. So after getting some experience, you came back here to Mansfield and
yeah.
opened a brewery. I mean, that's really blunt and simple. I'm sure it wasn't that simple.
Yeah, one great thing about the school is they'll set you up internship.
Oh, nice.
And they set me up at Ithaca Beer.
Uh-huh.
I think it was 6 weeks I went there and worked, and that's where I met Mike.
Oh, okay.
Like he was kind of, yep. He was in charge of like looking over me and teaching me what things. And then after that was over, I left, and this was 2008. So like, I don't know if you remember 2008. Like,
oh, right.
Collapse yeah. of everything.
Yeah, great time to open a business.
Yeah, so I was looking for work, and I remember I was on this, this board, this website, and there was a brewery job opening, and one guy posted, he's like, I will pay you if I can work here.
Wow.
And I was thinking in my head, how can you compete
right.
compete with that?
Right.
So luckily, the head brewer at Ithaca emailed me a few weeks later and asked me if I wanted a full-time position.
Uh-huh.
So I accepted it and started cool. working there.
Made a lot of flower power?
Not as much as I'd like to. We made a lot of apricot wheat.
Oh, right.
A
right.
lot of apricot wheat.
A lot of apricot wheat. Yeah. My wife's family's up in that area, north of there. So, oh, yeah, nice. We see a lot of Ithaca beer. I mean, today still.
Flower power, we used to fight over the half pours, like the bottling line. If it's a little high, a little low, you had to take it off.
Right, right.
So we'd have a couple cases at the end of the day.
So you, how'd you get from there to here?
Why, the whole goal was always to open.
Uh-huh.
Kind of the only place here.
And you were planning on this building, right? Because your mom owned it. Yeah.
And at the time, this was like a craft beer dead zone.
Yeah.
Like there was two bars and you could get Sierra Nevada pale ale.
Okay.
In bottles. But other than that.
Wow. In bottles. Okay.
Not really much of anything else. Yeah. Definitely not on draft.
Yeah.
So like working at the, production brewery, at the time I was like, this isn't really for me. I kind of got tired of the every day, like apricot wheat, apricot right. wheat, apricot wheat.
Yeah.
They did have a few, I forgot what the Celsior series they did.
Oh,
they
yeah.
could, they I could play around those. With. That was fun.
There were some great beers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I liked the brew pub setup, just the creativity
mm-hmm.
and small batch. You make a big batch of something, it doesn't sell. You're stuck with like a lot of beer.
Right.
But here, we have a 3-barrel brew house, so like I get 6 or 7 kegs of a beer. If it doesn't really sell well, it's not that big of a deal.
Right, right.
So I liked the whole brew pub setup. Like that, if I travel, I like to go to a brew pub over yep. like a production brewery type thing.
Right, right.
So that was my desire. Everything's changed since then. Like back then, it was either like a production brewery or brew pub.
Right.
Now there's some hybrids.
Yeah, lots of crossover. Changed. Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, a lot of the big places will have a pilot brewery to feed a tap room.
Yeah.
Can do both. Which is great, because I mean, people have more choices.
Yeah.
And that's what this whole thing was always supposed to be about. I love that. So tell me about the building. I mean, I got to tell you, the first time I ever came here, which I can't remember when it was, it's got to be at least 8 years ago, if not more. The thing that struck me was the building.
Well, we got very lucky because when my mother had her salon in here, the walls were not brick. They uh-huh. were like sheetrock on both sides, fake ceiling, like a whatever that
drop, lower, ceiling.
Drop ceiling. The yep. floor was linoleum.
Oh, wow.
And this archway back here was covered up. Like you could see the shape of it, but mm-hmm. we weren't sure if it was a wood or, or if. But
yeah, I mean, it's a gorgeous brick arch.
Yeah, once we started tearing everything away, we were very fortunate. And the building itself, what we figured out is that the back half where the kitchen and the restrooms are was built on later.
Oh, like everything past the arch?
Yeah, because we're thinking that must have been a door, like a giant door for like wagons or something.
Uh-huh.
We can't figure out what it was before.
Oh, you're not sure what the building was before?
No, before my mom's beauty salon, it was a card, like, you know, like when Valentine's Day cards. Like,
oh, well, like a Hallmark kind
of
thing?
Yeah, Hallmark place. Yeah. And for most of the 20th century, it was like a five a dime shop.
Okay, sure.
Before that, I have no idea.
Huh.
But we thought maybe something like building wagons or something with horses or something.
Yeah, that's a big arch.
Yeah, we're fortunate. Yeah, we just took off the walls and acid washed the brick.
And I mean, the floors.
The floor is the original floor.
I would love to have this floor in my house.
It looks good. It's kind of like it's off a lot. I mean, what are you going to do?
A couple replacements.
Yeah.
Yeah, but.
Yeah, it's the original floor. And you can see over there where when we put the tanks down in.
Oh, is that what the, okay.
But luckily that was like that. There was a hole.
Oh, there was a hole there. Oh, nice.
Because we did find that up there on top of that. I think it was
that tank?
Yeah, that tank up there.
That was
in the basement.
Oh, my God.
I think it was kerosene.
Oh, okay.
Because when we took the ceiling down, there was all these lines for, like, kerosene oil for the old oil lands.
Oh, okay. Craft beer desert, and you came here and opened up shop. What was that like?
Overwhelming, I guess. Like, just being a small business is still overwhelming.
Yeah, it's every day, isn't it?
Yeah, every day, nonstop. You can't get sick days. Yeah, the reception was great.
So, I mean, people were interested. People took to it.
Yeah, good reception. Yeah,
yeah. And what is Mansfield? About 3,000, a little less.
Yeah, and like with the university, it fluctuates.
Okay,
so
yeah.
I think like 2010, 2011, when we opened in 2011, was the university had the most students it ever had.
Oh.
So it was pretty big, but, you know, in the last decade, over a decade, it's, you know, contracted a little bit.
Oh, okay.
So the population fluctuates a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
But a lot of our business has to do with the university. Uh-huh. If there's anything going on, like students moving in, moving out, sporting events, so.
Things will pop.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Like faculty staff come down a lot, or
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Do they have grad students?
Or
is it all undergrad?
I think it's all undergrad. They used to have some, like you get your master's in certain things, but I don't know if they do that. They've really changed what they offered in the last few years.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, do you get any seniors coming down, or do you get much student traffic? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Like I said, like if it's any like event where the family of the student is in town.
Okay.
You get a lot of traffic. But also, you don't have to be 21 to come in here.
Oh, right. You know, okay. It's
primarily a restaurant.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, I wanted to ask you about the food, because I think the first two times I came in, I didn't have anything to eat, and now I regret that, because I have been back since, and the food's really good.
Thank you.
Tell me about the program. A lot of local stuff?
Yeah, not as much as it used to.
Okay.
But we've always used the same... beef, local beef
from
Troy, Milky Way Farms. You know, when we first opened, we wanted to support farmers and do as much local as possible. It's so difficult.
It's hard.
It's very hard. And there was a, you know, throughout the years.
I mean, to be fair, it's hard for them too.
Yeah. It's hard, like even for the customers, the prices, they.
Sure.
But we evolved. I think it's big for a business to keep trying new things. And so like one time we tried this, like this ultra local menu. Like we cut our menu in half and like everything was local.
Wow.
Chicken wings, chicken, beef, Kaisers, like pretty much 90% of it was local. And we had a lot of backlash.
Ooh.
Like I got angry emails, long emails.
Because of the prices or because of the cutback on the menu?
Well, a little bit of both.
Okay.
Because like fish and chips is very popular here.
Oh, yeah. Not going to be a lot of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, like, chicken, you know, the chicken prices go up a little bit. You get a chicken that's slightly smaller because it doesn't have steroids in it.
Yeah.
For more of a price. And so, eventually, we got away from that and went back to, like, the regular menu. Trying to find, a middle ground.
Yeah.
But, like, burgers is our flagship item and, like, the burger meat.
And you can do that.
Local.
Okay. So. Well, that's cool. Yeah. You have regular specials. I mean, I know I've been in here on Fridays and had the fish and chips. Is that a serve the local thing, or is that a, I don't know, is that just a philosophy?
Well, we used to do like a different special every day.
Okay.
And that was hard on the staff to come up with something.
Oh.
And it was hard on us to like come up with a price because, you know, like they come up with an item and then you're like, well, what's in it? Like trying to calculate it. And
yeah.
then customers not knowing what the special was going to be until it's like posted online. So like during COVID, made a bunch of changes to make things more simple. And that's
okay.
when we started to do like a Taco Tuesday.
Right.
Pizzas on Wednesday, discount on burgers on Thursday, fish and chips discount on Friday, Sunday or Saturdays, usually a different special. I'll usually smoke a brisket,
Ooh.
A pork butt, pig belly, different items.
Yeah.
So it changes, and I post it on Facebook and Instagram.
Nice. Yeah.
So I think that in like a smaller community, having the weekly items people know.
They know.
Yeah,
yeah.
You get more people to come back than like, well, I don't know what they're going to, like one week they had this and then the next week they had that. I like this, but I didn't like that. So
yeah.
Like,
yeah. I mean, I got to say it drives me nuts because I like variety, but I like consistency too. So I don't know what that was. It's just,
it's difficult.
Yeah, it is. It is. So we're 18 minutes into the interview. Maybe it's time to talk about beer.
That sounds good.
I just realized I maybe could have structured this a little better. So, you know, the big general question, is there a brewing philosophy? I think we already kind of talked about it a little bit. Just change things up.
Yeah, I've changed over the years. I think now, lately, in the past few years, I brew a lot of things that I want to drink.
Okay.
That I can't find other places. Like right now, I got the Rosh beer, smoked lager, last keg untapped, and then I got like a dark mild.
Ooh,
I love English milds.
Wow, okay.
And they're so hard to find.
Yes, yes.
Table saisons, I love a lot. Belgian style double.
Wow, okay. Sorry, you eat the table saison. My jaw just dropped. I love this.
Yeah, those are, they're hard to find.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think we all know that it's mostly IPAs, which they have their place.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But like I said, this is supposed to be about variety.
Yeah.
Yeah. That doesn't mean five different IPAs. Well, some places it does. Okay.
Schwartz beer is another one I really love.
Yeah. I just actually just had a Schwartz with dinner last night. Yeah. And they're not easy to find. I had to bring it home from Denver. So, you know, and they aren't out there all over.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk about the Pennsylvania Wilds series.
Oh, yeah. The PA Wilds.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of a play on words. You know, there's the Pennsylvania Wilds region.
Right. Which we're in, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Mansfield often described as like the gateway to the wilds.
Okay.
Because like 15 coincides with 6, and then like Grand Canyon's west of here. And even if you leave here, you can drive like 3 hours. You're just totally in PA Wilds.
Yeah.
No
town's bigger than this one.
Yeah.
Right.
And then at the same time, it's a wild ale.
Right. Okay.
Initially, it started off... you remember Scott Whelan. He was kind of my assistant brewer. A young guy from Philadelphia.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
long time
ago.
So him and I, we were just a couple of nuts back then. And so, like, you know, when it comes to beer, hops is kind of like the newer ingredient. You know, for thousands of years, they use other things.
Yeah.
So initially, we're like, what else could we use? So we played around with, like, blue spruce.
Oh, okay.
Dandelion.
Uh-huh.
Leaves. I think rhubarb.
Some druidy kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We did that for a while until, like, honestly, they didn't really... There's not too much science behind that. You're like, how much rhubarb should I put in
Right.
So it was a lot of hit or miss.
Yeah.
And then after doing that for a
Sounds cool, though.
Yeah, it was fun for a while.
Yeah.
But then I kind of grew out of that, and I've always been obsessed with, like, wild yeast and stuff like that. So it moved more towards... where I brew it, and then I got like a little cool ship upstairs.
Really?
And I put it in that overnight with a fan blowing
out.
Yeah. And then I transfer it downstairs and pitch like a Belgian yeast, then let it go, and then put it in a barrel.
Okay.
And then do, you know, the couple examples here. This was probably one of my favorites was the peach one.
Uh-huh.
So that was in a barrel. And I'd get frozen peaches through my food purveyor.
Mm-hmm.
But also when it was like peach season, the local market, I'd just grab just container peaches and just smash them and sure. put them in the barrel. And
yeah, I know. I mean, I used to homebrew, and whenever I did a peach beer a couple of times, and anytime I just go to the local farm and say, can I get seconds?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, one, they're usually ripe.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And two, they're cheap.
And another neat thing is right out of town here, I used to work on a grounds crew at Mansfield University, and I learned that there's a peach tree that grows next to the creek.
Just like a wild...
Just a wild one. So I don't know how it got there, but yeah. during the time of year, we'd always stop and like climb out and
really?
Get the peaches. And so I knew it was there, so I climbed out and grabbed some peaches. I also added that to it.
Cool.
This one's probably the most cleanest. That's just nothing added to it. Just
culture?
Yep.
Okay.
And then this is the one we have available now. It's described as like a PA Wild's Ale.
Okay.
And I would have named it that, but my one friend had an...
Oh my God, man. I'm sorry. I just saw the aged on smoked beets.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Sorry. I've never heard that. That's awesome.
So my friend had the name, gave me this name idea. I don't know if you're an Office fan.
I don't know that. Bears, it's Beats, Battlestar Galactica. Oh, gotcha, right. Dwight and the Beat Farm.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, gotcha now.
So he gave me that idea for a name, so that's what he called it.
That's pretty cool. I've never heard of smoked beets in a beer.
It was a local beets also that way.
Oh, yeah? So, yeah? Yeah, great. That's great. You don't have a flagship. Is that?
If I had to, probably the Vanilla Porter.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, the PA Grand Canyon Vanilla Porter.
Okay.
I try to always have that.
I won't say that's a unique flagship, but that's unusual as a flagship. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's kind of describe it as like a gateway drug, but like a lot of people come in and they think a dark beer is really harsh and appalling,
right.
And then they have it, and it tastes more like, you know, like chocolate and vanilla, and it's almost like a dessert in a way.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, I didn't think dark beer tasted like this.
Yeah, like Easter candy almost.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. We briefly mentioned this, but the Festival of Stouts, I went for the first time last year. that is a really goofy event. How'd that get started?
The Carnival of Stouts was just an idea that, like, you know, like stouts is like the base of a stout. You can do so much with it. And we just got this crazy idea. And like, I'm really into Halloween and horror movies and stuff like that. And I just thought it'd be fun to do a stout event with some weird flavors. And I was just looking at horror movies, and I think I saw some. Eventually, I came up with Carnival of Stouts.
Okay.
And so the carnival theme, that's how it began. And then we had someone local make the...
I mean, you had like... It looked like the... And I was shocked with that. I was like, wow, you're going all in here.
Yeah, it looks like a circus tent.
Yeah, like striped canvas out there. And yeah.
Previous years, we did have staff dress up in like different costumes and stuff. But like, I've gotten more lenient. Like, you don't have to do that. Because some people were all about it, and then others were not so about it.
Oh,
so
yeah,
I'm just
yeah.
like, if you want to... Go ahead if you don't.
That's all right.
Yeah. But it's been fun. I mean, it was a slow burn of the first couple of years. You have a little bit of bump, but then there's been some years it's been pretty crazy. To the point where, like, typically to help with the flow, we had to get a ton of sample glasses. Like, mm-hmm. the first year, we didn't even think about that. We had our sample glasses, but we didn't think that we would need a couple hundred. So we learned from that, and then like we got pitchers the following year.
Oh.
Because just the flow of beer, quicker. You just boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been a lot of fun. We got like a popcorn machine in the back.
Yep.
That we sell popcorn. It also adds the smell of a carnival to
right,
it.
Right, yeah.
And we do corn dogs. It's like carny food.
I love your menu notations on that.
It's that.
Like, yeah, whatever.
That's probably the most fun. I remember... One year, it stresses me out because it's always down to the wire when I sample them.
Uh-huh.
It's usually the day before or that morning. I put them on tap, and then I start sampling them to type up the menu.
Oh, right.
And they're always usually imperial strength, so 8 or 10%. And one time I just drank too much and was so frustrated that I was like, screw it. I'm just going to let loose with whatever I feel. And so that's how the menu became to be so like brash, I guess.
How many different flavors have you had? You had like a whole checklist at this last one.
Over 80 that I counted last time.
Yeah.
It's gotten so bad that I made a list this year and put out for people to circle old ones that want us to redo them or new ideas. Because we've literally done everything. I've done like mushroom to smoked or bacon to like one year we did a breakfast theme.
Mm-hmm.
So we did a few cereal ones and then we did a bacon and maple syrup and then we did like a pancake. And then one year we did spirits that were soaked in oak chips.
Oh, uh-huh.
So it was like a rum, a bourbon, a brandy, a bunch of others. And then this year was the white stout was the base. So there's always kind of a theme,
mm-hmm.
but I'm running out of ideas. I need help with that.
Yeah. So you've got, what is it, the Party of Porters? It's relatively new. That's coming up this week, this Friday or next Friday?
Next Friday. Okay. So the Party of Porters, we used to do our anniversary like every year. That was like the beginning of February. And like that's fun initially. And then like even 10 years, you're like, that's great. You made it 10 years. And then you get past that and it's like, what are we doing? So one of our patrons like, why don't you do the Party of Porters? And I was like, that's not a bad idea. With the party
alliteration is always good.
Yeah. And we have the Weekend of Wheats.
Oh, really?
For Memorial Day.
Damn.
And that's it. Those are the
only
three.
Okay, all right. Yeah, you don't want to push it. Gets silly.
Yeah, the Party of Porters is more conservative. It's not silly flavors like the stouts.
Oh, okay.
We got coffee. Cherry. I did a jalapeno one because I get a lot of, when I do jalapeno for the stout one,
mm-hmm.
people always love it. That's a difficult to do.
I'm not huge on it, but when it's done right, it's pretty darn good.
Yeah, it's hard not to get that that veggie,
that
bad veggie taste.
Yeah.
So I did a jalapeno one, like a chocolate one. I think a pecan or an almond.
Okay.
Just they're very conservative. Just nothing, the Carvel Stouts, like you.
Anything can happen.
What did I can't remember. I did one that I was like, this is terrible. It was some weird fruit.
I got to be honest. Bubblegum. I was not crazy about the fruit punch.
Yeah, the fruit punch was not terrible. Nuts about that one. I think one was bubblegum maybe. Like you can see I'm running out of ideas.
Yes!
My one buddy and I got drunk one time trying to come up with ideas. And when we came to Old Bay Stout, I was like,
we've gone too far.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. We did that. Okay. I'm good here. You're sitting at the crossroads of, some real central Pennsylvania iconic roads, Route 6 and Route 15. Where do people go from here? If you're in Mansfield and you've had a great time, where do you go the next day?
Ooh, you could go in like almost any direction and have a great time. You head west, Wellsboro and the PA Grand Canyon and the PA Wilds. North, Corning.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's a great town.
Yep.
And then like Ithaca is fantastic. I used to work up there, so I love that town. South, Williamsport, the Bullfrog, New Trail. I mean, they got John Ryan, Boone City.
Good food at John Ryan.
So many breweries there. And then, there's East. East is a lot of farmland.
Mm-hmm.
That's where my family's farm is and where we get our beef from. If you ever go east and then go down 14, Milky Way Farms is right on the right there. It's just this little place, and they have some of the best milkshakes and ice cream. They have
a stand.
It's a building.
Yeah.
But they bottle their own milk there still.
Okay.
Like the glass bottles? Yeah. It's fantastic.
Nice.
Yeah, Mansfield used to have one right across the bridge here where Sheetz is.
Mm-hmm.
There used to be a dairy farm with a restaurant attached to it.
Right there.
Get some of the best ice cream.
That's too bad.
Yeah, but having a dairy farm attached to a restaurant, health codes, that's probably not.
Yeah, there's probably some problems there.
But it was great while it lasted.
Oh, yeah. Like, Fry Brothers used to be an actual turkey farm.
Yeah, that's true.
Not anymore. So that's pretty much all I got. Thank you.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah. Good time. And I mean, it just bugs me. We're driving past here all the time on the way up to the in-laws. I'm going to have to stop in more often.
Yeah, please do. Let me know.
All right. Cool. Thanks, Jared. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
All right.
Except for those few visits to York Hollow over the years that I mentioned, and the occasional stop for gas at the Sheets on the edge of town, this was the first time I'd ever really been around in Mansfield. So before I went, I checked in with my wife's cousin, Heather Moline, who went to Mansfield University about 20 years ago. Wow, things had changed, and more than a bit. The only place Heather told me about that was still there was Papa V's Pizza, across Main Street from York Hollow. All the other drinking spots had closed, well, except the Gaslight, which is 20 minutes away in Wellsboro. As she said, we went to a lot of house parties. I'm sure those are still around. It's maybe a reflection of that dry mindset at the campus that the town has two other coffee shops besides Conspiracy. I got a cup of Earl Grey tea and a delicious carrot cake muffin at 10 West Espresso. Felt like I needed to ease off the caffeine throttle a bit. Besides, there's more to do there than just coffee and fresh baked treats. It's also a consignment and antique shop with a wide arrangement of stuff, including a whole wall of decorated cow skulls and some pretty interesting old gas station stuff. While I was in there, the mail carrier came in and delivered letters and a load of town gossip. Gotta love a small town. From there, I had one more walking stop to get to, another coffee shop, the Night and Day Coffee Cafe. It was jumping at midday, with a couple of moms with stroller babies, some lunchtiming linemen, and, hey, it's the mail carrier again. We shared a laugh of recognition, and I got a nice hot cappuccino. The Night and Day has vibrant art on the walls and a full assortment of coffee and tea drinks, smoothies, hot chocolate, and fresh lemonade. There's also a bunch of bagel breakfasts, cold or grilled sandwiches, and salads. They smelled good, and I would have, but I had a couple of lunches to eat. First stop on the Eats tour was Papa the Butcher, right beside the Sheets on Route 6, where it crosses the Tioga River. It's a real butcher shop, and I got some sausages for the weekend and a bag of cheese cubes for snacking on the way home. They were nice people, and they have a nice selection of homemade foods for takeout. Among other things that day, they had beef stroganoff, Italian wedding soup, and a really nice-looking turkey club. It was time to hit the two semi-permanent food trucks in town. First was Timmy B's Southwest Grill, south of town on Main Street. It was blowing cold through the valley that afternoon, but the woman in the trailer looked nice and warm in there, and she quickly served me my choice, a rice and bean bowl with chopped brisket, chipotle crema, and pico de gallo. It was hot and freshly assembled and delicious. It was hard to have just a few bites and then pack it up for the ride home, but I had another food truck to hit. Hottie's Hot Off the Grill was the place everyone was talking about on social media, so I headed a little farther south to try it. Hottie's trailer is backed into a little enclosure that cut the wind, and they had an enclosed space with picnic tables and outdoor heaters. Welcome warmth on a cold winter day. Hottie's has sandwiches and subs, and I was really tempted by the Texas Hots, but I wanted to get the burger that everyone was talking about. I chose a mushroom Swiss burger and tater tots. The burger was more medium well than the medium rare I'd ordered, but it was big and tasted great, and the mushrooms were exceptional and plentiful. Tots, well, tots are tots, you know, but these were good and crispy, so that worked. And I have to be honest, I finished the burger. It was the mushrooms. They were so good. I took most of the tots home and split them with Pippin the next day. One more stop in Mansfield, but it wasn't food or drink. I'd seen a note on Google Maps about the Route 6 shops east of town, maybe a mile. The description was that there were some Etsy shops sharing a space. I thought it might be cute, maybe get something for Kathy or Nora. I'll be honest, it wasn't promising from outside, just a big old Quonset hut. But inside, it was almost like one of those bigger on the inside places you read about, just one thing after another. Antiques, puzzles, vintage clothing, crafts, more antiques, hats, vintage toys, and more stuff. Not just cheap crap, either. There was some really nice stuff in there. I didn't get anything, but I made a note to make a stop with Kathy the next time we drove through on our way north. Finally, about that semi-natural attraction I mentioned earlier. You may have noticed when you're driving north of Mansfield on Route 15, just after you drive across the eastern lobe of Tioga Lake, that off to the west, you can see a cut blasted through the ridge where a narrow, straight-line channel connects Tioga Lake to the lake behind it, Hammond Lake. And if you were a passenger in the car, you might have noticed the low dam in the channel and seen that the water level in Hammond is just a little bit higher than the level in Tioga. It's a strange feature. I was curious about it after seeing it on the way north to the in-laws one time. So I looked into it, and about 2 years ago, I made my way into the town of Tioga and up the hill to the overlook over the channel. The story's there, and it's worth driving up. The Tioga River has a substantial amount of acid mine damage, a sadly common situation in Pennsylvania. In the 1970s, the Army Corps of Engineers started a project to build a flood control dam on the Tioga. But they also saw an opportunity to ameliorate the extreme acidity of the river. So they dammed Crooked Creek over the ridge, creating Hammond Lake in that valley, and set the water level higher than in Tioga. The 2,700-foot channel they blasted through the ridge allows the clean waters of Hammond Lake to flow into Tioga. The low dam in the channel is technically a weir, a dam meant to raise the water level but still pass water over, or, in this case, through two internal gates. When the level in Hammond is high enough to allow it, the gates are opened and clean water flows into Tioga Lake. The water is enough to make the Tioga a clean habitat for fish and other wildlife again. It's a pretty cool win for the Army Corps and something to see. That's about it for Mansfield, and I hope you'll consider stopping the next time you're passing through. I've got a little more for you, though. Let's follow Jared's thought about Mansfield sometimes being more like New York than Pennsylvania. I was in New York last week, judging the New York State Brewers Association competition in Rochester. It was a day and a half comparing and scoring about 100 beers out of the over 1,400 that were submitted, giving careful consideration to accuracy to style, technical excellence, and above all, drinkability. Is it a good beer? But that wasn't all we did. We had some fun, too. I drove up Thursday morning and took a backwoods route up through the Quahana Wild area that was spectacular, except when the visibility dropped to about 30 yards and some intense snow squalls. Then I made my way through the Allegheny Indian Territory across the border in New York, filled my tank for $2.77 a gallon. As I drove on toward Buffalo, I rolled into Ellicottville, where I hadn't been since I wrote New York Breweries back in 2001. I was a bit ahead of schedule, so I made a nostalgic stop at Ellicottville Brewing, and I was overjoyed to find that their Blackjack Oatmeal Stout was on. I remembered this rich black beer from over 20 years ago, and I was glad to find it hadn't lost a step. It was a great stop in a neat little skiing town. I got back on the road, and soon I was carefully rolling down the neighborhood streets of Buffalo's Old First Ward to Gene McCarthy's Old First Ward Brewing Company. The OFW is a rare thing, an established gem of a corner bar with all that entails that has successfully added a brewery. Why is that rare? Because almost every time I've seen an established neighborhood bar add a brewery, it's exactly what it felt like, a brewery bolted onto a bar with generic cookie-cutter beers. Well, what Brian Kirchmeyer is making at OFW are definitely not generic beers. I had a Schwartz beer, a Keller beer, a Pilsner, and a tank sample of his Rauch beer, mostly half pours, and they were all exceptional beers I'd have been happy to have again and again. Say that again for the lunch, which was traditional Western New York beef on weck, a pile of thinly sliced, medium-rare roast beef on a Kummelweck roll, a small Kaiser-type roll sprinkled with caraway seeds and coarse salt. I took the extra step of anointing it with some of the fierce grated horseradish supplied on the side. This was a well-made beef on weck, and if you've never had one, it's a wonder. From there, we went to Autark Brewhouse. Autarky, if you're not familiar with the term, means a state of self-sufficiency, economic independence. See, Autark opened in a rare state for a brewpub, debt-free. It's simple, but offers a good range of very nice beers. I had half pours of two of them, Cozy, a dark mild, and Ordinary, a bitter, two of my favorite types of beer, easy drinking, low alcohol, and malt forward. And I thought they nailed both of them. And then I had a sip of Comfy, their much larger Baltic Porter, another of my favorite types, and it was quite good. Classic, really. I got the sip from my good friend John Hall, the co-owner and editor of All About Beer, and an inspiration to me as a podcaster. You should check out the Steal This Beer podcast he does with brewer Augie Carton and his award-winning This Week in Rauch Beer podcast. John was also judging beers, as was upstate beer journalist Will Cleveland and sometime brewer, sometime professor Ethan Cox, also friends of mine, who were showing us around. At this point, we checked into our motel, and the four of us caught a ride to the last stop of the day, Wayland Brewing in Orchard Park, New York. We went there to meet another friend, M. Sauter, who does the excellent beer education webcomic, Pints and Panels, which you must have a look at. She was doing a book signing at Wayland, and we went out to support her. Wayland was definitely worth a visit on its own. P.J. Dunn has a range of beers he's doing, and all of them, as the young say, slapped. I particularly enjoyed his Troost Porter and the Ember, a Czech Poltmave, an amber lager. I got a sixer of Ember to take home. Wayland is a big, airy, modernish place, but there's also a cozier bar in the front, which is probably where we'd have gravitated, but it wasn't in service by the time we got there. Wayland has a lot of space. The front bar, a couch and table area where we were, and a soaring main bar area with hugely high ceilings. There's also an event space where a flower arranging class was taking place, and an outdoor space. Could be a lot of fun in the summer. The next day, we made a stop at Eli Fish Brewing in Batavia, New York, where I had a tasty fish fry and a really good grisette, kind of session-strength saison. When I was judging this same competition 2 years ago, I judged a standout beer from Eli Fish, Heavy Maple, a wee heavy made using maple sap as the brewing water. Still impressed by that one. Then we headed to Rochester to do off-flavor training, provided by the very knowledgeable team at Genesee Brewery. I'd done this training with them before, but I always learned something. They dose Genesee beer with relatively high levels of common off-flavors like oxidation, lightstruck, movie popcorn butter, banana, metallic, so we can recognize them when we judge. After that, we all went over to the Genesee Brewhouse for dinner. This place is fantastic. It's an old brick building right on the brewery campus, which sits near the edge of the Genesee River Gorge, just downstream of the High Falls, a spectacular waterfall right in downtown Rochester. We had checked in at the Pilot Brewery and back when we first arrived, and tried some Jenny Cream variants, including one made with Kveik yeast and dry-hopped with Mosaic hops. They're getting a little crazy back there, and we loved it. Dinner was fun. Lots of beer talk over big plates of delicious comfort food. I got the adult grilled cheese made with cheddar, mutts, and a seasoned ricotta with a side of ripping good tomato bisque. John got a garbage plate, a Rochester specialty. This one was built on top of French fries and mac salad, topped with two cheeseburger patties smothered with chopped raw onions and a meat sauce that's similar to Texas hot sauce, but a bit thicker. I encouraged him to have it the classic way, strafed with ketchup, mustard, and Frank's hot sauce. It's so good, but I don't think he was able to eat more than a third of it. All of the next day was taken up with judging, which was great, but I can't think of a way to make it exciting enough for the podcast, so we'll just leave it at that. My last stop in New York was a brief one, just before heading home. I helped judge the best of show round on Sunday afternoon, comparing all 32 gold medal winners to find the one best beer. Yeah, that was pretty fun. John and M had already left for another book signing at Nine Spot Brewing in Rochester, about 20 minutes away, and during the judging, John had texted me that brewer Mike Beebe had a copy of my Whiskey Masterclass book that he'd really like to get signed. So, okay, I went. I got a glass of Beebe's Cream Ale. One of the best things about the resurgence of Genesee Cream Ale is that a lot of the craft brewers are also brewing cream ales, and they're largely quite good. This one certainly was. I just wish that so many didn't feel they had to add flavors to them. Nine Spot was a great place on Rochester's happening Monroe Avenue. You know, it's always good traveling with people who know where the good stuff is, which is kind of the idea of seeing through a glass. Thank you. That's the show. Thanks to Jared York for the interview and for giving me yet another reason to stop in Mansfield on our next drive through Tioga County. As always, you can find pictures for this episode on Instagram at Stag Podcast and on Facebook at Seen Through a Glass. If you're listening to the show on the radio at WSOV, there are over 30 more episodes to enjoy, including a Milheim episode and a Nittany Valley episode at seenthroughaglass.podbean.com. That's Podbean, PODBEAN.com. Or you can find us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. If you'd like to toss a bit in my hat to keep the show going, I have a coffee button in my Instagram link tree, that's at Stag Podcast, and at the Facebook page. Coffee, it's KO-FI, is an easy way to drop me a few bucks online to help keep this going. And if you've already donated, thank you. Columbia, Pennsylvania was originally named Wright's Ferry, but it was renamed in 1788 in hopes of luring the Congress to select it as the site of the new nation's capital. It didn't work, but they kept the name anyway. The next episode? Well, I'll be honest, I don't know. I had an idea lined up, and it just fell apart. So I guess we'll all find out what it's about in 2 weeks. Until then, thanks for listening. This is Lou Bryson on Seen Through a Glass from the smack dab center of the Keystone State.